Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself, Simon and Danny Murphy discussed the murmurings of discontent amongst Newcastle fans. Are they valid? Erik ten Hag has pushed back on Jamie Carragher over what he believes is a lack of objectivity when it comes to Manchester United. Should managers hit back at pundits? Danny gives us his take on that. And a transfer window for managers? Can it work? This is Outspoken with White and Jordan. We'll talk now, though, about that match that Danny was working on last night. Newcastle, of course, have got themselves into the FA Cup quarterfinals. They hope to win a domestic trophy for the first time in about 69 years. It's quite incredible. Afterwards, Eddie Howe, you wouldn't be surprised to hear, was just saying it's the getting through that mattered.
It was a proper old-fashioned cup tie, really. I thought means everything to us. There's a lot of emotions during the game. That was really tough. I thought Blackburn played well. Made it very difficult for us to penetrate them and break them down. They were also a threat the other way. I thought our goalkeeper made a couple of really good saves in open play during the game, but as did theirs. So even contest, and we're delighted to get through.
I mean, Danny, you were there and you watched it at close quarters, but would winning the FA Cup, they're a long way off from doing that, I know that, but would winning the trophy take Newcastle's season from regressive to remarkable?
Pretty much. I mean, that would paper over a few cracks, but yeah, it would be an amazing achievement for them to get some trophy there, because that's what they're aiming for, really. You know, these owners didn't come in to be nearly there. They want to win trophies. Well, they said they're going to. So yeah, I think it would be a huge achievement for them, and really set things up nicely for next season and give Eddie a bit of breathing space. I worried for them a little bit in the last couple of months watching Newcastle. They've lost that athleticism and energy and superb intensity that they played with for the majority of last season, and at times this season, especially at home. They seem to create it better at home than they do away.
Why is that?
Well, I think ultimately it's down to a lack of strength and depth. I mean, a lot of those players have been flogged. A lot of those players have played a hell of a lot of minutes. And if you play the style that Eddie wants, you have to be physically very good. It's not a possession-based philosophy. It's a high-intensity, high-energy front-foot football that Eddie likes. And when there's a few players out of 11 who aren't quite with that, or on board with it, it becomes very difficult for the rest to follow suit. And you kind of get caught in this in-between situation where you want to do it, and you're nearly there, but you become a bit easier to play against, which is what we've seen, hence the fact they've conceded a lot of goals. They need to get players fit and get that squad.
Do you think there's an issue with Gimieras' athleticism?
Yes, absolutely. That's what will stop him being one of the best, because everything else in his game is superb.
Yep.
Great passer, technically gifted, but he's not a great athlete. I mean, he has... I feel for him, because I was the same, really. I had to be on top of my game to look a good player.
Yep.
And when I was below my best physically, I looked a bit lethargic and a bit sloppy at times. And he needs real athletes around him to shine. And normally they've got it with Joe Linton, Willock,
yeah.
Longstaff. Normally they surround him with amazing legs, so you see the best of him. But to be fair to Bruno, His durability in terms of always being available to play, he always turns up.
He's always
up.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, his athleticism is only a problem when he doesn't have those around him to help him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's still a crucial player for them. But in some, if you're talking about the best midfielders in the world, that's what will stop him being classed sure. as one of them.
Sure. I know why you're asking that, Simon. And Danny's answer is the perfect response to it. But you think that... I was watching that. I saw him some time ago up at St James's Park against Villa.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, I thought, there's nothing this guy can't do. And yet, last night, on occasion, I look at him and I think he's a bit laboured.
And I saw that in the Liverpool game. Now, I mean, look, we're looking for high standards.
And the Arsenal.
Yeah, we're looking for high standards because we're expecting Newcastle to land in and amongst the elite. And you can make certain arguments about where Aston Villa are at this moment in time. But the point is that I look at Newcastle and think, again, the Eddie Howe argument rages, and I am in the same camp as Danny. I think he's got enough credit in the bank not to be reading too much about people criticising the job that he's doing and questioning his ability to be continuing in that job. And that's unfortunately the victim of success that you get. I don't think it's being put on him. In previous incarnations, when Pardew got them into the top half of the table, there was always this observation that the next expectation of the Newcastle fans is to win the league. I don't think the downward pressure on Eddie Howe will come from the fans. I think it will either come from the owners creating their own narrative or sections of the media that are writing his obituary because it's absolutely explicit that Newcastle should now be landing inside the top four season upon season because of their ownership model.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say, and as I said, I've been his biggest fan, Eddie, the way he conducts himself, the way he coaches the team, everything. And on occasion, when I've seen them and struggling in games, that yes, there's sometimes personnel change, but very rarely tactical change. You know, like I thought last night was screaming out with the way Blackburn set up to play two up, you know, change it to play two up top. To occupy the three centre-halves for Blackburn a little bit more, get some runs in behind and play off the front men rather than try and play through this condensed space.
Mm.
And on the counter to that, you could argue that people like Pep and Guardiola and Pep and Jurgen never change because they believe in what they're doing. So it's a catch 22. But I did think maybe last night there was a time where he could have changed it to try and switch the momentum in the game. But they got through, to be fair.
I mean, Simon, murmurings of discontent amongst certain sections of the Newcastle support, are they valid?
I haven't heard it.
I don't know if that's true. If it's true, then I think they're a bit previous.
It simmers a bit.
Well, again, I don't know how true that is. You'll always find a dissenting voice if you seek it.
There was no murmurs in the 7,500 last night.
I mean, it's not the season that they anticipated. I also think that, again, I make the point, but, you know, that your outcome is your outcome. I think they were unlucky in the Champions League.
Oh, desperately.
And, you know, they can take a lot out of that Champions League campaign. And I think it's a learning curve this season. I think Eddie Howe needs to stabilise the ship a little bit and make sure that they do finish as near inside the top six as they possibly can. And then it's interesting to see what they'll do economically next season because they've got Champions League money coming into this season's finances, which will adjust their finances in terms of FFP. And it'll be interesting to see if they go again with another 150 or a couple of hundred million quid, because if Newcastle are going to go in the direction that everyone expects them to and Amanda Staveley has suggested that they inevitably will, there's going to have to be a change in personnel because there's players in there that have done a great job of them to get to this point, but the next level is the next level.
Okay, let us know what you think of our observations. Certainly Danny was there, Simon and I watched on from distance, but Newcastle got through on penalties. I'll put it out there this morning. Many of you back home last night, very, very late, having been there. Many of you will watch it, of course, hoping Newcastle got through, and they did. They're in the FA Cup quarterfinals. Can they go all the way and win a domestic trophy for the first time in all 70 years? What is your perspective on where Newcastle are at this time under Eddie Howe? That would be the question I'll ask you. 0371722344. Danny, there's Ruben. Bruno ran the second furthest distance this season, only beaten by James Ward-Prowse. It's unfair criticism to hear that this morning.
Athleticism.
No, no, covering distance isn't about athleticism and dynamism.
Yeah,
a lot of players cover a lot of distance, and I'm certainly not questioning his work rate.
Right,
his work ethic's tremendous, but there's some players are gifted with physical attributes that others aren't. You know, I played with Gerrard, one of the most physically competent midfielders you'll ever see. It was so natural to him.
Yeah,
you look at Bellingham. You know, he's just a beautiful athlete. It's a natural gift. Bruno hasn't got that, so he has to be on top of his game fitness wise. Not the only one. There's loads of players.
Okay.
Like that.
All right.
So it's not about distance covered, and it's not about work ethic. His work ethic's great. It's just.
Yeah, there's Pete and Gateshead. Jim, stop rabble-rousing. We have a few malcontents, like every club. There is no outcry for Eddie's head. Good, Pete and Gateshead. Come on and tell us.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Ah, this is what I love about doing this show. You put something out there, you get a response. This morning, because it's Newcastle, you get a huge response. I really like Newcastle United as a football club, but I've seen their fans home and away, and I love the way they go about it. Fantastic enthusiasm and passion for their club. And last night, and Blackburn, no disrespect, Newcastle moved through to the next round of the FA Cup. I personally would love them to get to Wembley. I'd love to see Newcastle there. I was there when they lost to Manchester United years ago, not long after I went to Sky, but 99, was it? 98, 99. Duncan was playing for Newcastle that day. But now they're in full stride, it would seem. Or are they? What's the Newcastle fans' perspective of where Newcastle are? Simon's with me, so too is Danny. And John's a big Newcastle fan. John, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Good
morning, John.
What is your perspective? It sounds as if you're in a very busy, noisy factory, but let's do it. What's your perspective of Newcastle?
The perspective of Newcastle is that this year, above all years, everybody was expecting big things. In the Carabao Cup, we had Manchester City, Manchester United and Chelsea.
Yep.
No harder run could you have had. In the Champions League, it was known as a group of death. In the FA Cup, all our games have been away from home. We've had a horrendous injury situation throughout the season, and yet everybody's pointing the finger at Eddie Howe. Plus, on top of that, we've not beat the club, who are the richest club in the world, have not been, due to financial fair play, have not been allowed to spend the money that the owners have.
Good point, John.
So I think great point.
In Eddie we trust, John. It seems
absolutely.
That, yeah. Yeah.
I'm driving to Newcastle Airport now, and as I'm driving, everybody I talk to tells me the same thing. Eddie Howe's the man to stay in the club.
Yeah.
Eddie man's like, what he's got to be allowed to do, he's got to be allowed to have a chance, A, with injury-free players, plus being allowed to spend some of the money that the other bigger clubs can spend.
John, good points there. Thank you. And Danny, you were agreeing almost with everything that John said.
Yeah, I think they conducted themselves well in the Champions League, and really they would have been guaranteed Europa League if they didn't push it and go for it in the last game to try and get in the Champions League, and the refereeing decision in PSG, etc., etc. They were very competent in their performances and did well in a group that really I didn't fancy them in. So that was right. I think the injuries, although other clubs have had injuries, Newcastle's has been bizarrely bad. Then you had the Tonali situation, just to add insult to injury.
True.
So I do feel for them. You can't have that many players, and the spending one's right. I mean, I've heard Simon talk eloquently about the changes needed in that for new owners to be able to at least compete and bring the business forward and be competitive.
Yeah,
and I think that's something that definitely needs addressing, because they are sitting on their hands, aren't they?
Simon, put us into perspective your thoughts on Eddie Howe. And where is that? Because, again, Pardew flared a bit about your terminology regarding him.
As a gatekeeper.
A gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Does he not like you?
I don't really care.
Pards.
I don't know. He's got an opinion on my opinion. That's fair enough. If I have an opinion, I've got to have an opinion back on my opinion, haven't I?
Yeah.
I think that the caller's points are decent points. I mean, every club has injuries, so they can't be singled out on that basis.
Yeah, but they had a spell where it was... argue there's a training regime analysis to be had.
Possibly, or just misfortune.
Yeah.
And then you do... And I repeatedly make the point about their Champions League exploits. And I think that there was always this inflated expectation. That, you know, Stuart Pearce sat in this very studio and said he thinks Newcastle are going to win the league this year.
Yes.
And that's the backdrop to which Eddie was managing in.
Right.
I don't think he's done much wrong. I don't think he's done much wrong from the moment he set foot in the door, from the players that he's bought to the players that he subsequently sold and got their money back from, to the way that the team has played. And I think they're just having a levelling off.
Yeah.
I do maintain the view that new ownership models, irrespective of whether I like the genesis of how this club is owned and who owns them, is irrelevant. A new ownership model should have a slightly different view of financial fair play, because it enables capital investment into football.
Do you think that will come?
I think they will sophisticate financial fair play. I think it's a blunt instrument that is now being implemented. And now that it's being implemented properly and with meaning, people are starting to cry. And so that will mean that it's never about implementing a rule, it's about how you enforce it. And now that they're starting to enforce it, you're starting to see that some of the inconsistencies, some of the challenges. So I think it will sophisticate once people have got the message that actually it's here and it's being enforced.
Sure. Interesting. There's Dan, a Newcastle fan. There is no outcry for Eddie's head, but the conversations are starting to happen. Something has changed since dropping out of Europe and the intensity has gone. Joe Linton seems to have been the catalyst to it all. Derek's a big Newcastle fan. Derek, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, everybody.
Morning, Derek.
Hang on. Derek, hang on. Are you the Derek that got in the taxi with me down at Southampton?
It's me, Jim, yeah. It's me.
Derek got in a cab with me. Oh, that was brilliant. Drop me off at the ground, would you, Jim? I love that. I didn't even know you were in the taxi. Derek, on you go.
I'll take anything, Jim. Last night was a tough game. It was actually agony to watch. I was absolutely through the roof, but we got through, and I thought Blackburn played really, really well. They go a right tough night, 120 minutes.
Right.
And you've got to give them credit.
But overall, what's your perspective of the club?
Yeah, fantastic. Move forward from what we were like 2 years ago. You kind of jumped that quickly in 2 years, the work we've done. The players are all behind Eddie. The fans are behind Eddie. I just one or two moments. But last season was a fantastic roller coaster ride. And I was just looking at everybody around saying, get your feet on the floor, get reality check, because you've got to improve the squad. The players are giving that all, and there's nothing out in say to fault any of them. It's just that we're just getting probably a bit of confidence at the minute.
Sure.
The injuries have upset the floor. I think Harvey Barnes, when he come on, he missed a good chance with two or three more game sharpness, he would have took that, no bother.
Yeah, but again, you feel positive about the future. Derek, you've made my day coming on, mate. We need to move on because I'm determined to squeeze in Chris, who's been waiting patiently. Chris, where's your head with your club at the moment?
Hello, lads. Good morning.
Morning, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah, I agree with the last caller. I just feel like last season was it was a massive overachievement. I feel like we were unbelievable last season, but this season was always going to be a massive test because the squad just isn't big enough to cope with Champions League football and then the Premier League and all the other cup competitions. So I feel like where we are now is sort of where the fans expected. I think the thing that worries the fans is no one knows what's going on in the owners' heads, and the fact that we are getting players back in the squad now, Eddie Howe hasn't really got many excuses. So I just hope it doesn't happen, but I hope the owners don't start getting impatient with him.
I think they'll listen to you guys, first and foremost. Normally the biggest problem for owners is the fans' discontent. That's where it starts. I know they're ambitious, but I mean, I don't see any... there's just nothing in me that sees a change is needed for now. You know, they can strengthen again.
I think that's a fair comment from Danny, Simon. The owners have got nothing to be sitting up and be worried about. I wouldn't have thought.
No, but they didn't buy a football club for them to tread water. And they want to see that the direction of travel is going in the right direction. Mm. They, by their own admission, okay, it's an excited moment. But one of their mouthpieces, after losing the League Cup last year, was telling everyone they're going to win the Premier League, the Champions League, the League Cup and the FA Cup. Now,
yeah, but you have to give that context.
Well, you do have to give it context. But that was
Amanda with me, Simon, when she was like...
But fine.
Probably had a few shares.
But that's fine, but that's a mindset.
Lost a Carabao Cup.
That's what they're aiming for. Yeah, fine. Okay, I understand that. But ultimately, that's what's in your mind.
Yeah.
Whether you should say it or not, or whether you're emotional or you're invested in the opportunity at the time, you're still you know, often some of the biggest truths are told when people are in moments of weakness or people's moments of emotion. Mm. So their belief system is that this is what they're going to achieve. Now, are they going to want to achieve that over 10 years? Because I tell you something, the gulf in class between Newcastle and Arsenal on Saturday was vast. And no. that's who they're after.
Fair point.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The world's most dangerous download.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
So the world of punditry. The world of punditry. Danny Murphy alongside us, of course. Danny, no stranger to punditry for a long time now. On television, on radio, he's everywhere. He's omnipresent. So too are many others. Roy Keane, Gary Neville, of course, Jamie Carragher. Jamie Carragher, of course, in the news at the moment. Speaking on Sky's Monday Night Football, he critiqued Manchester United's lack of pressing during their game against Fulham, highlighting Mainoo in the opening minute of the match. What are his instructions before the game, said Jamie? Straight from kickoff, he's not sure whether he should close down the holding midfield player or looking at the number 10. He's caught straight from the kickoff. He should know, you should know your job straight from the kickoff. And that's down to the coaching staff. Interestingly, Ten Hag picked up on what Jamie said.
So some analysts are very objective in their comments, very good advices. Some are very subjective. So Jamie Carragher is one of them. From the first moment on, he's criticised, and now he wants to make his point. And probably in the first half an hour, he had a point. Where Fulham, in the midfield setup, a little bit surprises, and then we have to find the solutions. And after half an hour, we found the solutions. Where we are, I was not pleased with the performance in defending, especially there over the left side, how we did that, the pressing, because they came out, especially in the first half an hour, several times over the left side, can't happen. And that has to do everything with willingness and spirit and passion. And that was, in the previous weeks, was very good from this team. And therefore, we won football games.
So it's kind of bristling a bit, Danny, isn't he, Ten Hag? Suggesting that there's a lack of objectivity with what Jamie said, because Jamie's ex-Liverpool, maybe has got some kind of an agenda against United. Who knows?
Firstly, I think any manager who starts responding to any pundit's work is losing the battle. A manager who's completely focused and has self-belief in what they're doing wouldn't feel the need to defend, analyse, criticise a pundit who's not working in the game as a manager, because you're already above the pundit. You're in the position at Manchester United for a reason. You don't need to justify what you do and answer questions about what a pundit says or doesn't. I think you've lost as soon as you do.
What, the very fact he responds to it?
Indeed. I've always believed it, and I think any manager in charge of a big club does not need, he can just avoid the concern, I'm not interested in talking about that. Move on. You can talk to a journalist, should be able to can ask a question about tactics, whatever, and you answer the question. When you start linking in pundits, I think you give the manager a real big, big problem. And he already looks like he's defensive for not believing what he... Why would you respond? But in terms of what he says about objectivity and subjectivity, you know, subjectivity based on your feelings rather than evidence, I know where he's coming from, ex-Liverpool. I think at times when you do our job, there is inevitably a little bit of that because of friendships, because of likes, dislikes, certain types of football, certain players, attitudes, behaviours. It's human nature to like some players and managers and teams better than others.
Well, let's cut to the chase.
But what you have...
Do you work differently when you're working in a Liverpool game
No.
to any other game?
No, I don't.
And do you see it differently?
I'd like to... No, I don't. I really believe I don't.
Are you pro-Liverpool when you shouldn't be?
No. If anything, I think it can go the other way. I think you can actually do bad punditry because you try not to be that and you go the other way. And I would say this about Jamie, and I've known him a long time. There's very few people in the world I work in now who I believe watch more football than me and understand more than me. Maybe that's ego, arrogance, call it what you like. He's one of them. Jamie Carragher watches more football than me. Jamie Carragher is as intelligent a football man as I know. And I don't believe for one second that if that was Liverpool defending that badly, he wouldn't do it. And I don't believe for one second if United were being brilliant and really well organised and the great tactical plan, he wouldn't do it as well.
As you speak, there's Jack from Sheppey. Morning, chaps. I love you, Danny. But you get as defensive over your mucker Carragher just as much as Ten Hag does with criticism towards him.
I'm not defensive. I've just made articulate points and given my opinion of someone I know very, very well. And how
but
much
you've
football...
immediately leapt to the support of Jamie.
Well, what do you want me to do? Immediately go against him when I don't believe it? I've just spoken my truth.
And you said Ten
Hag
was wrong to respond to
it. My belief any manager is wrong to answer questions about any pundit's opinion. Unless it's personal. If somebody goes for someone personally, of course, stand your corner, defend yourself, because that's ridiculous. Why would a pundit do that?
Do you agree with that, Simon? That Ten Hag should have shut down when it comes to following up on what a pundit has or hasn't said?
Takes him nowhere.
Yes and no. I mean, look, I mean, you've seen Pochettino respond to Gary Neville's observations. You've seen Jose Mourinho respond to Jamie Redknapp's observations. And these guys are at the top of the tree. You know, Mourinho, once upon a time, an elite manager. Pochettino, one of those guys that, you know, people perceive to be one of the top managers around, and they do it. I think the world has slightly changed. I do actually concur with Danny's view that you embolden the thinking of the pundit at the same time as give them more credibility and diminish yourself by explaining it. At the same time, there's often a case where you put people in their place sometimes. Mm. Punditry is becoming more prevalent. Noise is becoming more specific. People get to say things and not be held accountable for them. I don't necessarily think that there's a fairness about the observations that he makes. There is clearly an element of enthusiasm from Jamie towards Liverpool at times. And there's clearly an enthusiasm, or in this instance, often not the case with Gary Neville, because it gives him currency with Man United fans when he's going against the Glazers at Man United.
They make no bones about it.
But that's not a problem. For me, it's not much of a problem. It's whether you're objective when you're looking at other sides, whether your opinion is fair.
Yeah.
If Jamie Carragher's opinion on this particular subject matter is fair, then I don't think whether sometimes he gets carried away in commentary for Liverpool is, I think that's irrelevant. Mm. I think that's just people nitpicking because they want to find a reason to dislike what someone's saying or disagree with what someone's point of view is. You disarm people with facts, not with feelings.
Yeah.
Well, the reality
last
is...
Last night, were you pro-Blackburn when you shouldn't have been, no, having played for Blackburn?
No. Try and say what I see. I really believe that I do that. I think most pundits do. On occasion, that might not be the case because, as I said, human nature kicks in terms of likes and dislikes and people and teams, but very rarely I hear that. I think Gary Neville was the first to hammer United when he needs to. Yes, he cheers, he wants them to win and all that, but he's the first to jump on the bat when they've been back. Look, the thing about the subject we're talking about is Manchester United not being tactically very good, but more importantly, leaving wide open spaces in the middle of the pitch. The evidence tells you...
Which is what they do.
The evidence tells you that's what they do. And the goals they concede are a lot coming from that area. And there's been more than Jamie Carragher's piece on it. I mean, there was a great piece after Forest, when they lost at Forest, on that exact subject. This ain't new. Now, Ten Hag watches the videos, watches the pieces, looks at the numbers, look at the midfield runners who they struggle to track, look at the gaps. Fulham have gone there and made them look like average. The evidence is there. So by responding, it's just crazy.
But
he puts himself
in
a really
bad position. And it was an articulate response.
Yeah, it was calm.
Irrespective of whether you agree with him, he should do it or not. But when you start saying that someone's subjective because they're clearly partisan towards a team that you're not playing on that day, right? So it's an irrelevant conversation. Mm. What it is it's basically it's playing the man and not the game. So basically, was Jamie Carragher's opinions fair and representative of watching Manchester United? And his partisanship towards Liverpool is moderately incidental because Liverpool aren't involved in the conversation in that game. And by making it about subjectivity, not objectivity, you're playing the man, not the game. So disarm his points. And if we believe that as a result of what Ten Hag says, he's disarmed Jamie Carragher's points and correctly pushed him back into his place, then that's one conversation. But he made it about subjectivity rather than objectivity.
Yeah. But then he also said for the first 30 minutes of the game, he was probably right.
Well, yeah. There you are then.
There's a message for you, Danny. Danny, not pro-Blackburn, are you kidding? Get him to go and listen to himself again from last night. I mean, on social media, there was quite a bit. But social media. Yeah, social
media. The thing
media.
Is with Coco.
But a lot of people were saying, Danny is ex-Blackburn. Listen to him.
Well, what did they say about Shearer's analysis on the game? Because it was the same as mine.
Same thing.
And yeah. He loves Newcastle more than anyone I've ever met.
Mm. Okay, we'll put it
he
out
doesn't,
there.
It doesn't mean you dislike Newcastle. I like Newcastle. I've been Eddie Howe's biggest fan on it. I know a lot of Newcastle fans through Al. I mean, it's a great club. I've got nothing against it. I've even said this morning I was kind of pleased they went through for Eddie and those supporters who turned up there. I mean, Jesus, what more can you say? It doesn't bother me either way who went through. I saw Blackburn making Newcastle look an equal to them for huge parts of that game. And I saw a lethargy and a lack of fizz about Newcastle and a lack of athleticism and zest about their play that they needed to improve. And they did get lucky at times.
Danger. Flammable exchanges ahead.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
This topic of punditry and objectivity within it has absolutely exploded, I have to say. So many of you sending in messages of who's your favourite pundit. Mr. Murphy features high on that list of many. Can pundits be as objective as they should be? Are they as objective as they should be? Danny is saying, yeah, it's almost inevitable. And I think this is your point. If you've got a history with a football club, it's well nigh impossible to hide that, you're saying?
I think, it's not just about football clubs. It's about people you know maybe as well. Sometimes you can go a bit easier on them because you like them and human nature kicks in is what my point was. But yeah, if you spent years at a club and you love that club and you got friends there, you are in the back of your mind thinking, you know, am I going to jeopardise that if I go too strong? But over time, when you've been in the punditry game as long as I have, you have to lose that to gain respect. And I think most pundits you see do change and get better at that after the first couple of years. I believe that. I don't watch any pundits anymore and really think, you know, let loose. They all come across pretty honest. And I've seen the best of them be very critical about their own clubs.
Okay, fair point. Bruce is a Manchester City fan and wants his say on this. Bruce, thanks for phoning in. What do you want to say to us, mate? Good morning.
Yes, hello there. Yeah, I agree with Danny, actually, because the first thing a pundit doesn't want to come across as being biased. So if you take Gary Neville, say, for instance, played for Man United, obviously loves the club. But he's been really critical at times of Man United about the style of play, lack of effort, the Glazers. And I think Danny's right, actually. If you love a club and you've actually played for a club and you see these things that are going seriously wrong, if anything, you actually go the opposite way because you want them to get back to where they used to be.
Yeah, but Bruce, I mean, it wasn't you, but we had a City fan on recently who was talking about us being the red media now and again.
No, I don't see that at all. I think, listen, if you're a pundit, people would see through it if you were subjective and if you were biased. I think you begin to lose your credibility. And I think pundits now, these days,
yeah,
the only thing they've got is credibility at the end of the day.
Okay, Bruce, listen, thank you for that. I think Bruce is speaking to us from under his bed, Simon, but we kind of get his drift. I mean, do you think some pundits go the other way, Simon? As he suggests, like Neville maybe does now and again with United.
Well, I think there's different motivations behind that. I think some of that's playing to the gallery, specifically when it departs into the territory of the Glazers endlessly from everything.
You don't like being overly critical about Palace, do you?
No, I don't. I think as long as it's fair comment, I don't think it really matters. I mean, people talk to me repeatedly. The abuse that I get on social media comes predominantly from one football club, Man City fans. Every time I open my trap about... Every time I read an abusive comment on social media... Dollars for donuts. If I look at the profile of the person, which I rarely bother to do, it's a Man City fan. And there's no objectivity in the opinion. I can sit here and say, Man City are a brilliant football team. They're a remarkable team to watch. But I do think they've got charges to answer. And I do think, in my belief system, is that they're potentially guilty. That to a Man City fan is a lack of objectivity. No, it's just a balanced opinion. I can give you criticism. Look at the credit column. Look at the debit column. Football is based upon tribalism, isn't it? And if people want to suggest that ultimately someone says something that they don't like, more often than not, they'll disappear into either giving you some abuse based upon some other ridiculous perspective or suggesting that you have a lack of objectivity. I think fair comment is fair comment.
Yeah.
And if Jamie Carragher, for example, in this instance, is commenting unfairly on Manchester United whilst, you know, on a game that Liverpool aren't participating in because he happens to be a Liverpool supporter, then he will eventually be dropped from the punditry roster because people won't like his punditry. And I think I'm in the same camp as Danny. I think as an observer, I think Jamie Carragher is as good as you get. And well, I think it's relatively... I mean, I don't... Sometimes he gets excitable about Liverpool, but, you know, well, so what?
Interestingly, though, Danny, you said that Ten Hag was maybe wrong to respond to what Carragher had said the other day. That man just shouldn't jump in and respond. Many people are asking us to find this clip and play it, so we've done that. Klopp last season responded to our very own pundit, Gabby Agbonlahor, actually coming to the defence of Manchester United after Gabby criticised United's mentality.
It was obviously not nice, not a nice week for United after the Brentford game. We forget in these moments how good Brentford is, to be honest. It was that bad. I drove home, coincidentally listened to Talk Sport, and Gabby... He lost against us 6-0 when I, my first year. I couldn't remember him as a mentality monster on the pitch, but what he said about United and that in that show, I was close to call in. And I was close to call in and tell him, you forgot completely that you have been a player. It's unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And if ex-players go already like this, then you can imagine how everything else is going.
Well, Klopp's probably out in the training ground at the moment, but they take their phones, don't they? So you can call in 0371 722 3344. What's your take on that? Klopp didn't hold back, jumped into the debate.
I think it's wrong. Like I said, nothing else changed my mind. He's giving Gabby credibility on a comment he made on a radio show regarding Man United. Why bother? Why does Jürgen need to defend Man United? Why does Jürgen need to bring a pundit into it? Just back the question off, go on to something relevant and important.
Well, I do actually think there's something to be said. I concur with your view that let it go over your head and silence is the best medicine for people and it gives them no credibility whatsoever. But there are times when some of the witterings from the media do need to be corrected. I remember years ago, bloody Adrian Durham on this show talking absolute crap about me and Crystal Palace and Steve Bruce. And I took a chance to phone in and tell him exactly how stupid he was and how little he understood and how little he knew.
Yeah, well, you see, but that's that. We're all different.
I don't regret doing that.
No, because I think it was an important exercise in correcting some, because the media is, whether I like it or I don't, the media is very influential and sometimes it gets carried away with itself and sometimes people don't get corrected, and if I'm wrong, I'm very happy to be corrected. I'm very happy to be corrected by someone that knows the difference between the truth and some work of fiction.
How strong did you go when you called in?
I pretty much told him he didn't know what he was talking about, but that could have sort of followed his career. But that,
see,
for me,
Simon, there's two aspects to it. There's professional and personal. I think if someone starts talking personally about you and starts going on below the belt, then there's a feel and a need to just put somebody back in a place or in the box, because that's ridiculous and it's poor. But when you're talking, somebody wants to judge my punditry or judge my footballing ability or lack of it or whatever they want to say, that's fine. I'm not gonna use my energy in trying to put them right, defend myself based on their opinion.
But he is the greatest example of someone putting someone in their place was Frank Lampard phoning up that snivelling, ghastly weasel, James O'Brien, and putting him firmly in his place, who then crawled up Frank Lampard's backside and apologised profusely because he made terrible observations about Frank and his private life.
But that's personal.
I'm concurring with you. Mm. But when you're criticising the team's selection and also the message that's being imparted, you are, by definition, questioning the prowess and the professional capability of the manager and his personal relationship with players and ability to understand messages.
Yeah, but the person, i.e. going back to the original trigger point of this conversation, Eric Ten Hag is sitting in the hot seat at Manchester United. Jamie's on Sky.
Yep.
No, don't need to go there. Don't need to go there. He's not going to gain anything by going there. Yep. If anything, it can only work the opposite way.
So did Klopp need to go there on Gabby?
No.
But that's like saying Boris Johnson doesn't need to respond to Morticia Adams passing as Beth Rigby when she asked him questions. You are in a position of influence.
You have a right, and again, this is only opinion to get, you have a right to answer the questions you want to answer.
Yeah.
And if you're going to try as a journalist to get a manager of a Premier League team to engage in a tit for tat with a pundit on a radio show or a TV show, you're already losing by going there, in my opinion. As a player looking up at my manager, as a fan, an intelligent fan looking up at my manager and the leader of my club, I don't want him or think he needs to be engaging with people less than him in those tit for tat debates.
Why is Jamie Carragher less? Why is Jamie Carragher's opinion
than? I'm
worth
surprised
less
your choice
than,
of words.
Simply, he's chosen a different path.
His opinion might not be worth it, but what I'm saying is his standing in the game. If you're manager of Manchester United, your standing is greater than if you work for Sky or Talksport or BBC, like myself or Jamie, right? You automatically.
Does that make your opinion less valid? Surely, if you're someone of credential, if it was a bloody influencer, if it was that Wally Mark Goldbridge making an observation, would you expect Ten Hag? No. But when you've got a former top England player that's opining on a very influential broadcaster, I take your point and I do concur with some of it, but I think you're underestimating the nature and influence of media and the feeling that people that you say that would say, well, he's maybe not a manager, shouldn't respond to it. People like people to be put back in their place, and every now and again, someone of influence and someone of authority
He could have just said, look, I'm the manager of Manchester United. I think I know what I'm doing, and I think me and the players know what we're doing.
100% engagement. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Simon, talking about football management, reports suggest that managers are calling for new rules that mean they can only be sacked during transfer windows and not in season, similar to that of players. So you can't sack the players mid-season, so why sack managers? Is there anything in this? One manager who wishes to remain anonymous
right.
is quoted as saying, players have contracts and rules that mean they are not moved outside of the windows. It should be the same for us.
Oh, shut up. I mean, this is a completely different dynamic. Managers have responsibility for more than just themselves. Players have responsibility for themselves. And because of the nature of the commercial value of a player, you have to endure some of that tripe that you put up with from players that you wouldn't necessarily do if you didn't have to. Managers are a different animal. And if the League Managers Association are seriously suggesting that putting someone into a position of authority and finding that person not fit for purpose and then affecting the entire organisation and the entire football operation as a result of it should be endured for a longer period of time than you have to, this is ridiculous. Managers are paid compensation.
Would that happen in any other industry, Sal, or does it? Because it sounds ludicrous.
Well, no, because it's a ludicrous argument. You know, I've never been a great admirer of the League Managers Association. I don't think they contribute very much, full stop. My endearing memory of them was them turning up at the training ground. Ray Graydon, I like Ray Graydon as a player, but he sat outside Peter Taylor's office as I was firing him and then came out and said, I'm here for my annual review of the League Manager's position in terms of how you're getting on. I said, well, he's not getting on very well because I just fired him. and that's the League Managers Association input. If you really are seriously serious, I mean, what a cowardly individual to say, I'm quite happy to tell you that I think something should happen, but I don't want my name attached to it.
Bizarre.
I'm so cowardly. If you believe something, stand up for it.
But if you appoint a new manager, why not? Why not at least give them one season? You appointed them.
Well, you'd want to give them one.
After much
the
thought.
The last thing you'd want to do is employ somebody, put them on a contract, and then pay them for failing by giving them the boot and having to pay the rest of their contract up or significant proportions of it. So the last thing you want to do is find somebody in a job that you've recruited them for, bought players off the back of their so-called intellect, and then allowed them to run amok on your football team and then have to endure it for another 9 months because some imbecile in a trade union suggests that's somehow equitable.
But it was you that appointed the manager.
And it would be me that pays him.
But Simon, would that even be on a serious note? Would that even be enforceable?
If you write it in someone's contract, ultimately, I can't suggest.
No, if a governing body dictated that you had to do it as an owner of the football club, would they be dictated to you? Could they dictate to you?
Look, I mean, what you write in someone's contract and what they have to adhere to depends upon, again, the parameters of what you are asking them to do in the first place.
No, I'm saying that for governing body.
But what they're saying is it doesn't make any sense. What are they asking you to change? They're asking you to accept the fact that players are on fixed term contracts. And get to stay there. And managers don't. Yeah, but managers get to be paid. Now, it might not be the full contractual obligation because the mitigation circumstances have changed around managers' compensation, but there is no other profession in the world where you get paid for failing. That's what managers who get fired do. And very rarely do they get fired for being successful.
But many of those same managers might, if given the chance, could turn it round. You well, don't know.
But again, you're thinking that there is a logic or is a logical response to sacking somebody. You don't sack someone on a whim. I take the point with Johnny Eustace. That's the case that probably is an exception that doesn't prove the rule, right? But the point is most of the time it is an absolute wrench to fire a manager. You've got to get rid of his backroom staff. You've got to get rid of all the potential decisions that he's made have got to be unwound because, you know, dollars for donuts, the next guy comes in, doesn't want the very things that the other manager had. So all of that is a wrench. So this sort of busyness, I mean, they'd be better off maybe inventing rules for Quidditch or something. Something useful like that for the League Managers Association. I mean,
the Championship has seen 12 sackings already this season. Beale's one of them. Joe
all
Edwards,
deserved, aren't they?
Joe Edwards at Millwall was the latest. 12 in one in the season. 12.
I just don't see how you could force someone who owns a business, which is a football club, to keep someone employed who's not doing the job properly. Seems bizarre.
It's not a grown-up conversation, and it's not sensible. It doesn't have any sense attached to it, because ultimately there is such a difference. To draw a parallel between a manager and a player is just silly.
So the Premier League and the EFL couldn't enforce that rule, is what you're saying?
Well, given that a lot of the football stuff exists in the ether and it's nonsense anyway, yes, you could enforce it if you write it in someone's contract. Your contractual obligations are...
Half-brained
imbecile owner is prepared to accept that you cannot sack somebody for a year and write it in their contract, right? Then they'll be abiding by that contract.
But you, as an owner, have made your bed, should you not lie in it? You appointed the manager.
Yes.
And you're looking for stability in football.
You appoint a manager based upon a degree of reputation, mm-hmm. a degree of perception, and a degree of what they tell you in an interview. And if they tell you something in an interview and they do the polar opposite, they turn out to be an absolute loon that doesn't understand what he's doing, and you've made a bad appointment. In no other industry would someone say, you might have to pay for that. Mm. And ironically, that's already been covered. You do have to pay for it.
See, there's an argument that Forrest got it wrong by sacking Cooper when they did.
Not yet.
Well, Forrest are still alive and well, and not in any relegation-type conversation at the moment.
They're in a similar predicament to where they were. Just hovering above the relegation.
I mean, we all call for stability in the game, Simon, but 12 sackings already in the Championship, 10 in League 1, 13 in League 2. It's going well.
But they know what they're getting into. They know what they're getting into.
But you don't get
well.
Stability just for stability's sake. You could make the argument that Steven Gerrard should have been given longer at Aston Villa then. How do you square that circle when you've got Unai Emery smashing it and Steven Gerrard, you know, doing whatever he's doing in Saudi? The point is that you have to be able to make decisions, and if the consequence of those decisions are financial ramifications, they are already protected. They're already in a protected position. Nobody else in any other walk of life gets protected the way football people do. You sign a contract, you're stuck with someone. And if they're bloody useless, you're stuck with them economically.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.